The segues really are our biggest hit.
That's so sad.
They're what we're good at.
I would say good. And so he spoke,
that Lord of Castamere. The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production. Now the rains, we bore his home with no one there to hear. Yes, now the
rains, we bore his home with no one. Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, here to discuss the latest episode of Game of Thrones entitled The Spoils of War, and I'm here with Shane Settner.
Yo.
Bobby Schmidt.
Hello.
Joe Settner.
Hey.
Superfan Megan Norfleet.
Hey.
And Phil Crone.
Hi, friends.
I feel like your voice should go up an octave each time instead of like...
I don't have that kind of vocal range. I've got 3 octaves at best. So like on a regular episode of the podcast, sure. Yeah, note taken.
Okay.
But these big group Game of Thrones, it's just not going to happen.
That is true. In the Wire podcast, you were going, Shane, JR, Bobby.
And it'll never be heard again.
then he went silent.
Those are dead and gone. Yeah. A pretty abbreviated episode this week. One of the shorter episodes that Game of Thrones has ever done at a brisk 50 minutes. And we only really visit a handful of locations. So this might be a brisk podcast episode as well. But we'll see. We tend to get long-winded about various nonsensical topics.
You're about to put us in our first bet at the King's Landing Casino of Make-Believe Props. Over-under on the time of the podcast now, 1 hour and 15 minutes.
See, this is like a Heisenberg effect, where we're observing a result and are therefore going to be changing it. So, shenanigans. Can't do it. We meet up with Bran in Winterfell. He's situated in his old room. Gets a couple of visitors. In this episode, Littlefinger stops by to give him the Valyrian dagger that way back when in the second episode of the series was used to attempt to kill him. Bran, like we've established that he's an emotionless robot more or less now, but he still appreciates a good burn every now and then. And he quotes Littlefinger's speech about chaos back at him just to verify that. It's not just a question of can Bran see things when a weirwood tree is around. He can see everything at all times.
Is that what you got from that?
The question Brian asked it, does Bran know some stuff or all stuff?
He knows all stuff.
That it's all. I don't agree. He doesn't know future stuff.
Yeah.
He doesn't know future stuff. Sure. Okay. That's fine.
I think he can go and look at anything in the past.
I don't know if he knows all stuff. He definitely knows some stuff, but has the capability or the... Well, I mean, not the capability, but has the opportunity to eventually know all stuff.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think he knows it all right now.
I don't think he chooses what he knows either, right? Like, I kind of feel like that's why he's so emotionless, is the burden of having to know all of these things that maybe he doesn't want to know. You know, stuff like what happened to Sansa and just all of this history and the things with Jon. Like, he's never asked for any of this. And so the burden of having like the knowledge of everything that's happened or potentially knowing everything that's happened is what's making him like so obnoxiously dead behind the eyes.
Yeah, we don't know what kind of control he has over his visions right now, but obviously he's having plenty of them that we don't get to see. And he's learning things that he doesn't want to know.
I don't really see that in his character. I think he's flat, not because of a burden necessarily, just because like he says in the following scene with his second visitor, Mira, he remembers his own life, but he remembers hundreds of other lives as well now. So his own life doesn't necessarily take precedent over any of those people either.
The only way this can work in my head at this point is I have to compare him to Professor X in the X-Men.
Sure, like we went Dr. Manhattan when he goes into week.
Yeah.
Because he's in a wheelchair?
Stephen Hawking doesn't have powers, Phil.
Are you sure? Have you confirmed that?
I'm not
have
certain.
Have you talked to Stephen Hawking? Have you
Fair
seen
enough.
Stephen Hawking
and
Professor X in the
no
same
one's
room
actually
at the same
okay.
time?
We did just say his name, and he like flashed up in the corner all
there
of a sudden. So
I think it's like he's probably can see everything, but then can be very selective about it. I don't know.
I think he just has like historical Wikipedia in his head. He can just access anything at any moment with no impact to his health or personal well-being.
Which, concerning history, I think, for me anyway, the most important part about him meeting with Littlefinger there was when he was given the dagger, he asked, do you know who this belonged to? but I don't think he was actually inquiring. It sounded like he knows it has some historic past, like it belonged to Aegon or somebody throughout history. Like he had this, I know something, do you know who this belongs to? And it's also in that book that Sam was reading, so I think that kind of was a poke at something more significant with the dagger.
Speaking of Professor X, the childcare people at my school referred to my child as Professor Wes as a kickoff of that, I assume because he can't walk and also he's bald. Just wanted to throw that out there for everybody.
He's going to grow up to be James McAvoy too, unless things take a turn and he grows up into Patrick Stewart. Like, we'll just never know. We'll all be dead.
That would
by
be
then.
Cool if your kid grew up British. I mean, that'd be a cool turn.
He could probably learn a solid British. If everyone in this house just agreed from this moment on that we're going to speak in a British accent, he would
crikey a lot.
Sure. Yeah, like a shitty My Fair Lady area of Britain.
What if we
Cockney,
did?
That's
yeah.
It.
What if we did Cockney with Wes and just regular American with Jeff and just kind of just fucked with him a little bit?
Sure, why not? Yeah, we can tell Wes he's Oliver Twist, and we can tell Jeff that he's Tom Sawyer.
All right, tell people
both ragamuffins from different Western.
Jeff
countries.
Was raised on Madonna CDs from the 80s, and Wes was raised on
just like Tom
on
Sawyer
Madonna CDs from the aughts.
What kind of music do you think Mira grew up listening to?
That is a terrible.
She's pretty upset. That's definitely, she's gonna be walking right out and listen to some Dashboard right after that.
Sure. Yeah. She had a tough moment there. Think about her brother. Think about how little this person that she's invested her life in cares about her now. Again, like I said last week, I'm with Bran. I understand. Like why he's acting this way, but yeah, it's frustrating when he is going to be so flat. Like, and it does like take a lot of the air out of these scenes. Is that just me thinking that?
No, it's not. The acting is. I have to rewind the scene to actually hear what the hell he's saying for starters. But yeah, it definitely every time he comes on screen at this point, I kind of check out a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think he's a bad actor, Isaac Hampstead. Right, I think he's just being given like an organic but very uninteresting path for the character.
Man, I am just Team Bran all the way. I love it.
Yeah, I'm a
love what he's doing.
He's committed to it for sure.
Yes, but like, so, is what he's committing to like good for the show? I don't know. I don't know if the answer to that is in the affirmative.
Can I ask a dumb question about his character? Does he care what happens to people at this point?
No.
I mean, is he basically a sociopath? Is what I'm getting at.
No. He just has access to all these other lives.
I guess so a sociopath needs some sort of motivation or goal, but what is his goal, I guess, is what I'm getting at here.
I mean, I assume it's to stop the White Walkers. But
is that it?
I think he cares, but he doesn't care about such trivial things like, oh, you want me to say thank you? Like, what kind of thank you is that anyway? It's trash.
Individual lives and courtesy can't be a priority to him at that point, right?
That's the excuse I'm going to use when I don't want to make small talk with someone anymore.
I have access to too many lives.
I mean, I have Facebook on my phone.
I don't understand why, like, I mean, I guess you guys just kind of answered it, but why there's no urgency in him trying to get in touch with John. Because, like, to me, I thought the whole point of him going back to Winterfell was to tell John about his parentage. And then he just kind of showed up and, like, John wasn't there. And he was just like, okay. Like, I don't know. I feel like especially in an abbreviated season, you know, where everything else seems to be happening at warp speed, I feel like the scenes with him feel like quicksand. Like they feel so slow and drawn out. It's really hard for me to watch.
Yeah. And like another of the Stark siblings arrives in Winterfell. Arya is now there, and the three Stark children have a reunion together in the Godswood. And like with last week, Bran is mentioning that he saw all this stuff with Arya, and they don't have follow-up questions, which bothers me a little bit. Like, they're not shocked that Bran knows all this stuff.
Yeah.
They don't ask anything. Go ahead.
I'm not too surprised that Arya doesn't ask, because she's been through some shit that a lot of people would have questions about, too. So she could just be like, you know, it is what it is. But Sansa, you think, would be asking both of them a ton of questions about why Arya can do what she can do now and why Bran can do what he can do.
It's not really important because we know what happened. They would just be rehashing it in a sense. We know what happened. We can just assume that it happens off screen.
Sure, we don't have to see her ask, but I guess she doesn't even.
She should be awed.
Well, she says Bran has visions now.
So, in a very matter-of-fact way.
Yeah, Bran has visions, and it's cold outside.
That implies that they had a conversation about it at some point, though, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I would rather see like that conversation than the conversation between Arya and those two guards, which went on a very long time.
Way longer than it ever should have.
Yeah, but it was also just another callback that they do a lot from her early time.
Yeah,
from season one, where she's trying to get into King's Landing.
Yeah, but that was like two sentences back and forth.
When's the last time we laughed at this show?
Was any of that funny?
I mean, I thought it was somewhat humorous.
I think it was written, maybe it could have been humorous, but I don't know. Was that one of the famous baseball people that you guys have talked about?
Oh, no.
It wasn't?
He's in the end.
He's later.
Yeah.
Was he the Lannister guard? He was like quivering, shaking.
Do you think one of
those
two guys was like a baseball player?
I don't think they're great athletes.
Like, what do you think a baseball player looks like?
Pretty. What was that fat ass pitcher?
John Crocco.
Yeah, fat ass pitcher got to narrow it down. Yeah.
Bartolo Colon is every baseball player. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like he was eating two hot dogs before he was going out to the mound. And this is not on his first trip out to the mound.
Yeah.
This is every inning going back and forth. Hot dogs pitching.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I don't think of them as athletes.
You do not have to be in great shape to play baseball. That is true.
I'm glad we've established that. So the last thing in Winterfell, Brienne and Arya square off. Ostensibly, Brienne is training Arya, but Brienne can clearly learn a couple things from Arya as well. This is just a fun little fan servicey scene. It's totally fine.
I don't think there was any training of Arya there at all. I think Arya just went there to warm up or to get a good workout in.
She got a big ass boot to her chest. So
she did.
That's a good lesson that not just fighting the waif.
Yeah, I mean, but it wasn't like she went there with the intention of, man, I need to learn how Brian is a fighter. I need to learn her skills.
Isn't Arya smart enough now to think that if she can spar with a top 2-3 fighter in all of Westeros, she's going to learn something?
I think that was for the audience first and foremost.
Oh, well, sure, absolutely.
That she is, both because it was like well choreographed and also because just to demonstrate that Arya can hold her own against like proper knights now.
Yeah, that was the question I had. I think I even brought that up in the season preview is can Arya actually fight, for lack of a better word?
And she had a lot of those moves in season four when she was with the Hound, and the Hound would just like slap her in the face and that would be the end of it.
Well, and wasn't that why she wanted to bar with Brienne in the first place? Was because of the Hound and because Brienne had defeated the Hound. So, I mean, I do think she wanted to see if she could go toe-to-toe with this person that beat her, for lack of a better word, mentor.
Yeah, I think that's true. Anything else in Winterfell before we move on?
There was a question from Riley.
Yes, there was. Excuse me. Will we see Mira again? Riley asks. Is she still John's secret twin? On the former and the latter, I would say no to both.
I would say yes to the former. I think we see her again. And it's probably just hopeful, wishful thinking, which I mentioned post-pod last week, is her dad, Howland, is out there, and she's going to find her family. So I'm hoping there's a connection there.
Yeah, I think the only reason we'd see her again is if she brings Howland Reed into the mix, her dad.
I think this is a totally appropriate place for like a tertiary character to leave the show. Like she completed her mission, and her mission is unappreciated.
Right, I won't be upset if she's not back.
Yeah,
what do you mean unappreciated? He said thank you.
He barely needs it. He says thank you to the same person that like carries him down the stairs in his wheelchair in that exact same tone, intonation, and passion level. Megan, you had some quotes to throw at us again this week.
A new segment. This time I've entitled it 140 incinerated Lannisters or less.
Sure.
This week I have taken quotes from this episode and I have rewritten them as if our commander in chief, Donald Trump, tweeted them at us, just to see how we could take these and put a little spin on them. So The first one is from that very first scene with Bran and Littlefinger, where Bran, of course, recalls the chaos is a ladder quote. So if Donald Trump were going to tweet about this, I imagine this is exactly how it would go. Fake news reports that chaos is a pit, forgets to report that we have built a ladder, the best ladder. We're going to bring ladders back and make America climb ladders again. Hashtag MACLA.
Solid. Make chaos ladder great again?
No. That's a lot of like quick letter thinking for me. No, make America climb ladders again.
Nice.
MACLA.
How many characters was that?
So I did, that one was 153, but I really didn't think you guys were going to call me out on that, but
I'm the thing that's fucked up about that is Joe actually can't count, and Phil's an actuary, so just total guessing on Joe's part.
Phil, well, can't the other read. Thing,
the other thing that he does is that he'll tweet our president. He will tweet, like, a very long thing in three tweets. So, like, if you guys had really pushed me on it, I would have said there it was two separate tweets, but...
He's big about doing that. This is true.
He likes to
also,
wait.
Also, all of y'all's games
several minutes
suck,
between.
So shut up.
True. Well, Shane's games does. Yeah.
Well,
that was solid. That was strong.
Well, my game for this week was what if a MySpace, what if a Game of Thrones character made a MySpace page, but it's not going to work now.
It's not going to work as well now.
Brands.
I feel
is
like
just
with Mira, you've
text.
Already got.
Yeah, Brands is text. It looks like an old DOS screen. CD/ thank you.
Just a blocky cursor flashing.
That's some DOS humor for you millennials.
I will say with Mira, you at least came up with her background song.
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah.
It's good work.
Sounds like
follow you into the dark or something.
Yeah.
Danny is also following John into the dark, into the Dragonglass mine. And it turns out there's some cave drawings in there. this was alternatingly fine and silly, right?
Yeah. It's too cute. The cave drawings are too cute.
I almost put a prop bet out there that John drew those cave drawings himself. I was going to put it at +1,000. They drew them themselves.
Like the scene ends and he's rubbing some like blue chalk off on his pants.
Right. For being thousands of years old, that blue chalk holds up really well.
Yeah.
This episode brought to you by Sidewalk Chalk.
Okay. Were they not carvings? Am I the only one that thought they were carvings?
Well, there's still some blue there too. And I don't think you all have heard of dragon chalk, which if you look at the Game of Thrones wiki, you would know that's how it all existed there for so long. Dragon chalk.
Is that a serious statement?
God, no.
No. We did see those cave drawings. They were a little silly.
I'm going to Google dragon chalk and see if it's anything.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Valyrian stone is a thing, so why not dragon chalk? So these drawings, John uses them as like, if these two different species can work together, why can't we work together? Danny is still wanting him to bend the knee before they join forces. So John's tidy little metaphor doesn't quite carry the day.
It's almost like someone with like no formal artistic training was drawing in stone.
Like all the curly Q stuff, the circles, they looked fine.
Yeah, but
they looked like 10,000 years old. Sure, great. Why do they have to draw stick figures? Like the point is this is not up to the level of like dragon.
Where's
fire.
Your
it's
art? Where's stunning. Your art, John?
I don't.
Yeah, it was.
I wasn't part of like a cross species reunion that I was trying to document for historical purposes.
Megan, you were here last night. Did you see any John drawings that he made?
No,
in the house?
I didn't. I saw zero John drawings.
Hold on, I'm gonna get us out of this with an important question. Is this cultural appropriation of cave dwellers?
Cave dwellers were white people at one point, so I think it's fine. Like the best cave drawings are in France.
I did not expect a serious answer at all.
Wow. Well, and he's wrong on that anyways. I mean,
the best cave drawings are in France.
That's where the most famous ones are.
Lascaux, wherever Werner Herzog went for that movie.
I mean, you can totally ignore the Aztecs, but that's okay.
I mean, I can't name a single Aztec cave with cave drawings. I just named 1.5 in France.
There's literally still Aztec you know, ancestors living in the hills and mountains and dwellings in Mexico.
The French but, you know, were there millennia before the Aztecs got there.
None of this matters.
No, it doesn't. Very much matters, though, is why doesn't Masande swing her arms when she walks?
Oh, God, it was so bad.
Did anyone else notice this other than just our house?
I did not notice it, but now I will never be able to unsee it. Thanks.
She does not swing her arms when she walks.
There's, yes.
We're not talking like she doesn't move them a millimeter. They are glued to her side. She has like, to be trying.
You can. I feel like you can almost see it in her face how much she is trying to not swing her arms while she walks.
And it was.
She is furrowing her brow. Shoulders, stay where you're at.
Yeah, and what made it even more noticeable is the Dothraki extras in the background just swinging their arms all willy-nilly.
Yeah.
Like a toddler walking.
And Masande just got laid, because Danny wants them deets, yo.
It's unclear when she got laid, actually.
That's it, yeah, it could have been 3 years ago.
None of this matters.
She does talk about, like, her hooking up with Grey Worm just happened, like, the day before. Like,
yeah, I wouldn't say that. The day before, because he's obviously been at battle for, I mean, we got to assume at least a week, right?
Right.
No, right. That's
got to take forever. Well, yeah, but they got to go all the way to, where were they headed? Highgarden? It's not super close, right?
No, they were heading to
Castle Rock.
They being
Castle Rock.
Sorry, no, I like that we've discussed time issues a lot this season about battles and stuff, and now we're just referring to Cunnilingus.
Well, no, because like
we'll take whatever landmarks we
like, they were talking about it like it happened last night, but obviously Grey Worm's been gone for at least a bit of time to travel across the ocean and sack a city and whatever. Apparently they haven't talked at all, and they waited until this opportunity to talk about that night.
Well, shit,
this was a total joke, a bullet point, but it's another instance of how the show just does not care. Doesn't care about the White Walker cave drawings. Doesn't care about when Masande got laid.
Imagine oral sex so good you forget to talk about it for 6 weeks.
And you can't swing your arms anymore.
Can't swing your arms anymore.
You're broken.
Really good oral sex makes me paralyzed from the waist up.
So
does she swing her arms in the Fast and Furious movies?
It's a great question. I feel like these two universes are united. The Rock is going to voice Drogon at one point. It's going to be like in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, where Drogon is just going to belt out a no, and it's going to be Vin Diesel's voice. That's the only thing he's good at, is monosyllabic voice acting. So Dany doesn't get to hear those deets because Tyrion and Varys tell her about the bad news from the Rock and the Reach. A little logistical information is dropped in. They still have the ships to get the Dothraki from Dragonstone to Westeros. Tyrion still wants to stay on the path that they've decided on, but Dany takes a different tack. She's ready to burn it all down. And she asks Jon for his input. I feel like this is the first time she's gone to him for advice, and he's with Tyrion. Like, don't be part of the status quo. Don't burn castles and armies. See if you can't find that better way.
Did he say armies?
No, he said...
I thought he just said castles.
He said don't melt cities, castles maybe. And burn cities.
Okay. Yeah,
that's a big difference.
I think it was a very targeted hit that she did based on Jon and Tyrion's influence.
Right. He wasn't saying don't go to war, don't make a move. He was just specifically saying don't sack and burn King's Landing right now.
Yeah. I think the main thing is that they don't want her to kill civilians, basically. You know, it's fine if she burns a bunch of Lannister soldiers, but it's a really different thing if she does something similar to what her father did or to what Cersei did, which is killing innocent people who really don't have anything to do with the battle going on. The thing that I liked about this scene was it was really similar for me to right before the Battle of the Bastards when Jon was talking to Ramsay. And he was saying, you know, why don't you and I just fight? And why are your men going to fight for you if you won't fight for them? And like, Dany had a very similar mindset there, I think, because she was saying, you know, why is anyone going to fight for me if I won't risk my life to go out and fight these battles as well? So I do think she gets it to a certain extent that the reason these people are following her and the reason that they have faith in her is because she's always been willing to take things into her own hands and risk her own life for her people. And I think that that is a big difference between her and her father, as well as her and Cersei, is that, you know, she's not just going to sit back and watch all of this happen. She wants to be in the middle of it herself, too.
Yeah, a scene shortly after this that is less distracting because Masande is standing still, she's telling John about just why all these people from Essos are following her. She's the queen everyone chose. She wasn't like the Lannister soldiers that eventually get incinerated. Like, they just happen to be born under Lannister control and are therefore fighting for the Lannisters, whereas all those Dothraki have made the decision to fight for her.
Yeah, I like that. I like that scene because we're getting some more reflection of John and Danny anyway. Just to kind of complement each other as they're both chosen leaders, chosen for different reasons, I suppose, a little bit. But they're both chosen rather than just like, all right, you're this dude's kid, so there you go.
I mean, they are an important dude's kid, certainly.
Right. But they're still like the Dothraki never had to follow Danny. The Unsullied never had to follow Danny. None of these people had to follow Danny. They weren't beholden to that. They chose to do that.
So we have to give credit to Joe because
no, we don't. No, okay, stop. I know what you're gonna say.
And superfan Megan, because I thought so too. Yeah. And
okay.
All right, no, we're gonna see the floor to superfan Megan and Joe just brag for like 2 minutes straight.
But no. We all said that it was going to happen. We just said it didn't show up last episode. Of course it happened. Now, one, John has a thing for caves. It turns him on, and he seems to like women in the caves. But we all knew this is where it was going, but last episode, it was only there if you wanted it to be there. It wasn't something
we're showing us. No, it was definitely there.
Yeah, I'm gonna give you guys 2 minutes. Just Megan and Joe, just talk about how right you guys are.
I you know, I'm going to let my comments stand for themselves.
Wow.
The comment about Danny and John having chemistry, not the comment about the mountain eventually smashing Olenna Tyrell's face in.
Hey, sometimes you swing and miss with both stances. Sometimes you hit a home run.
You win some, you lose some.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, and Megan and I were very much right.
Are you referring to that as a home run?
Wait,
that was at most a ground rule double, and that's being generous.
Yeah. Well, there were a couple errors in there too.
Yeah, we all said it's gonna happen.
No, black and white, right v wrong. Last week, Joe said there is chemistry there. This week, it came to fruition.
He didn't say chemistry. He said there is sexual tension, which there was none. We all knew
there were so chemistry.
Man, I'm gonna admit we're wrong. If we're gonna stick with our baseball analogies,
I only think we're wrong because that's the direction the show wants to go in. I don't think there is actually anything in the performances that suggests sexual chemistry.
I'll disagree with
chemistry
you.
Chemistry in general.
I would disagree with you in the cave this week, but regardless, if we're sticking with the baseball analogy, you guys are all throwing at Joe because he hit a home run off you right now. That's it.
We're on tilt.
That's proper etiquette.
Yeah.
So I will say,
Joe didn't even flip the bat this week.
I will say, though, like, I do like the idea of there being a little bit more romance, because I feel like this season, again, it's so fast, everything's moving so quickly, and, like, you know, you have these two big battles coming for the Iron Throne and then with the White Walkers, but in the first couple of seasons, the first few seasons, really, there were some, like, great love stories in there.
This is interesting, because we talked about this last week, I believe, on the podcast, unless it was just me and Shane, about how there isn't a lot of romance in the show. Like, it's never just been a strong point. And you would it sounds like you would disagree with that, Megan.
I would disagree with that, because I think, like, when you think about, like, John and Ygritte, I thought that was a really great love story. I mean, when you think about Tyrion and, oh my God, what was that hooker's name?
Shay.
There you go.
Shay, you thought that Tyrion and that hooker.
Tyrion and that hooker
really loved each other.
A Pride and Prejudice.
But they did.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they got together and watched Pretty Woman all the time.
But, I mean, like, there were some great romances in the
show. Like Jaime and Cersei.
Jaime and Cersei was probably the best one.
I mean, and Rob and his wife. I mean, there have been
Hot Pie and Gendry. Who could forget?
Hot Pie and Gendry. I mean, it's rot with romance.
But
I mean,
but think about
really.
It. At this point, the best romances are Cersei and Jaime. There's no doubt that they loved each other. And now we're going to have an aunt and her nephew getting it on. I mean, at the very beginning, everybody is grossed out by this incest. And now people are getting excited by it.
It's been normalized. We talked about this. It was normalized seasons ago. I'm not concerned.
Truly, the show is made by heroes.
I hope they've made
incest just a shrug of the shoulder.
This is a Luke and Princess Leia situation where they realize they're related and someone starts fucking Harrison Ford. It'd be odd to add him at this point juncture, but whatever. He's a good actor. A little cantankerous.
They got Jim Broadbent in there pretty seamlessly. You can get Harrison Ford in there as like a 70-year-old sex symbol. It's no problem at all.
He's one of the peasants just like moving grain across and just drowns someone in corn that saves Danny's life, and then she falls for him. That'd be great.
Read our witness discussion on the Munich Movie Club from way back in season 2, I want to say, late season 2. We're in season 4 right now. So the last thing in Dragonstone is that Theon returns with the rest of the Greyjoys, including 35-point Harag, which we're just going to... By this point, I think those points are going to stand, even though they seem like a complete mistake, and that's going to be the difference between my victory and my place.
Wait, hold on. Because I heard you all debating about this last time around. So... Wasn't Harag the one that went down into the brig or whatever and captured Ilaria and Tyene?
Sure, why not? None of us know who he is.
On Yara's side.
No, he's not. He's one of Euron's guys, isn't he?
He's the guy that has lines. The point is, he's got more points than Tyrion.
and Littlefinger.
And Littlefinger. So we're just going to pretend that that's legitimate and go from there. John threatens to kill Theon, but he won't because he helps Sansa escape. Theon wants to rescue Yara, but he needs Dany's permission. But it just so happens that Dany is not at Dragonstone at the moment.
There's not much to talk about. This is about Theon.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, this is the moment that Theon avoided for a time, ever wanting to run into John. That's why he didn't go to Castle Black. But now things are different. So.
In fact, it took me a second to even realize what was happening. Because John even goes, is that a Greyjoy ship? And it still didn't register with me at that point until Theon's walking onto shore, and I'm like, oh shit. John has reason to hate him. I mean, it's been so long.
I forgot they knew each other.
Can you remind me what the dynamic was? Did they just didn't like each other? Was
that it? They didn't share lines in the one or two episodes that they were at the same location. Maybe in like the pilot, maybe.
Theon was like all getting shaved together. Yeah, they were getting their haircuts, and Theon was giving him shit.
The bastard gets the runt.
Yeah, he was giving him shit about the wolves. But also remember that Theon sacked Winterfell and at one time reportedly burned his brothers. So
right, mm-hmm. right.
Also remember that Theon was an insufferable dick for about 3 seasons.
It's true.
Yeah.
So, Phil, how's that King's Landing Casino doing?
Yeah, so we got our first prop bet of the night. It was not a great week for prop bets, I'm not going to lie. But so the first one I came up with is, how many kills will Theon land by the end of Season 7A? 0, you're going to get odds of 1-4. More than 0, just anything more than 0, I'm going to give you 5-2.
And this is from this moment forward.
From this moment forward. Well, end of season 7A, so you got 3 episodes left.
I think he gets one. I'll give him at least one.
I think it's easy to kill red shirts in this world.
It is easy. Okay.
Especially he's going after Yara, supposedly. He's going to end up somewhere in a fight.
I think the sexier odds would be is Theon ever going to get killed by someone else, or is he just going to off himself eventually, self-sacrifice?
No, I think he Irish goodbyes. I think he's like in one episode, and then we never see him again.
For what it's worth, in the King's Landing Casino of make-believe props, killing himself does not count.
Okay.
Oh, that's fair enough. He has to
score a kill on a person, not him. I was about to say not named Theon, but I guess he could kill another person named Theon. I don't know. There's 2 Rickons in this world.
So Megan, you've got more quotes for this, for this occasion, Megan.
Yes, I have 2 for this one. So, of course, the conversation between Missandei and Dany, where, you know, it's the what happened, the many things quote. So Donald Trump would say, things happen, so many things, bigly things. You've never seen things like these. Everyone said these were the best things any president has seen.
they were on their own little Planet Hollywood or Entertainment Tonight bus.
Yeah, that's exactly what that was. Yeah. There was definitely pussy grabbing there.
So. You got three dragons. You can just walk, do anything. You walk up to guys, grab them in the dick. No problem.
Yeah. Walk out onto the street, kill somebody, and still win. So the other part, and we didn't even talk about this, was Davos landed a couple of great lines this episode.
Yes.
And there's one point in which he looks at John and asks if he would forgive him if he switched sides and went with Dany. And so I believe that this would sound like Dany's base is stronger than ever. She has the best dragons, all the dragons. I support Dany now. Make Westeros burn again. Hashtag.
I feel like that one was right at the character limit, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was. But I mean, listen,
Trump is nothing.
John's not even paying attention to what you say now. He's just trying to count the letters in your words.
Literally, only one of them went over the character count. I ran them all through because I know you guys are dicks. Like, I'm not dumb.
You don't make the Twitter rules.
I listen to you guys just destroy Joe week in and week out.
Oh man. Joe finally has a defender.
I mean, it's not too late for Olenna Tyrell's face to get bashed in. Maybe they're shipping her. Maybe her body was in one of those carts.
Just the insult to injury.
I mean,
face smashing.
So, speaking of carts that may or may not be carrying the body of an old lady, the wagon train is moving from Highgarden to King's Landing, laden with gold and increasingly laden with grain from the various unwilling farmers that Jaime and Bronn and the Tarleys are passing. The caravan reaches a dangerous choke point, at which moment Bronn hears some hoof beats, and this can only mean one thing, really, especially with all the shrieks and everything. This is like a Braveheart moment where you're just anticipating this cavalry charge that does surely come, but you can like hear it coming, and eventually you can see it coming. Lannister troops are freaking out. Bronn tells Jaime to leave. He chooses not to leave, just as Drogon is swooping in with Dany aboard his back. So this is, as far as Game of Thrones battles go, a lot of highlights here, a lot of great stuff. Anyone want to single anything out in particular?
I mean, this is something we were all waiting to see, right? I mean, the dragons really, or a dragon really in action, full-grown fire against an army.
Yeah, like last season when they were burning the boats of the slavers, like they were just like hovering, right. Well, like helicopters or hummingbirds in front of boats and lighting them on fire. It wasn't very dynamic.
That was like the dragons just having fun burning things. Here it was a very direct attack, Dany on Drogon's back, and I don't know. We were waiting a while for this, so it was exciting to see.
Yeah, as soon as I saw them lining up, I'm like, oh god, that dragon's going down the line. It's not a very good defense for dragons. Good for fighting Dothraki running wildly into shields and with Major League pitchers throwing spears into their chest, but...
I mean, you gotta. I assume that's how you defeat a shield wall, anyways. I don't know.
Run as many horses as you can.
Yeah, that like causes a break, and then eventually you're able to weaken it enough.
Is that why Zap Brannigan was the greatest general of Westeros until he was
Operation Human Shield?
Exactly. His plan was to throw waves and waves of men at it.
Yeah. I mean, the Dothraki have yet. To be given, like, a single Dothraki has yet to be given a name or a defining characteristic beyond, like, their costuming. So they may as well just be cannon fodder for Lannister shield walls at this point.
Until they, like, slide down their corpse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like, it totally worked. Like, if you've got a dragon, like, blasting a hole through the line, that's all that they need. Like, it showed them very clearly, like, anticipating that move. Like, they all funneled through one line, and, like, once that happens, then disarray.
They were better fighters, and I mean, it wasn't like they were taking on the cream of the crop there. They were, the line was stretched out thin.
Well, I think if you're going to say what kind of, the Lannisters, if they get to, they'll get decimated by a dragon, are going to hold up for quite a while with their shields there and raining arrows down over them into Dothraki coming in who are getting piled up. Once the chaos, once they break, that's it.
Like, yeah, I mean, it would have been a better fight, but they
the Dothraki still would have won.
Yeah, I mean, Bronn basically said it. They're going to roll us over.
They're outnumbered. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those horseback archers that brought the Mongols from Mongolia to Western Russia. It's a solid medieval tactic.
Which, by the way, Bronn's right.
Sliding down your horse and chopping horse legs off.
Bronn's right in this scene. He doesn't get enough credit. He's doing everything.
Someone like put out, who was the MVP of the show? Was it Jamie or was it like Jamie, Danny, or someone else that wasn't Bronn? And I got really annoyed.
Yeah, what's a single pro in Jamie's category?
He just watched all this happen. Into a river.
So many points this week, though. Oh, like, Jamie, I don't know where they came it. From.
They came from the same place that Harag's points came
from. Yeah, we'll go over that.
Yeah, we'll save that for later. But
Dick Hunt, Tarly saved his ass. Bronn saved his ass. I like that they're sticking with Jamie being largely ineffectual, having lost his good hand. But yeah, this was not a fine moment for him. He could have very well have fled and been, and like the outcome would not have been changed in any way.
But it's very Jamie-esque what he did. I mean,
yes, absolutely.
He's a soldier, and that's, I don't know. It's what you expect of him.
He's a good leader on the field of battle. He's made mistakes, but I don't think anyone could ever accuse him of being a coward.
Right. Plus, it's Aegon's daughter or Aerys' daughter that he's going after. So I'm sure he also thought that, you know, this is in relation to I have to kill the Targaryen. You know, this is my chance before she does the damage that Aerys is going to do.
Yeah, that's how you win the war for Cersei right there. Right.
Various highlights. I loved the build up to getting the archers, and it's like escalating, the score is escalating, the shots are getting faster, and then Drogon just pulls up a little bit and they all bounce off his belly and he just roasts them all. I thought that was great. There's a lot of stuff happening at the same time. Like, this episode was directed by Matt Shackman, who is primarily an Always Sunny guy, strangely enough. So he gets comedic timing mixed in with this crazy, with the crazy resources that must have been put behind this battle. And like, that archer scene is a perfect example of that, as well as like the Dothraki who's chasing after Bronn, opening up the cabin and finding himself standing in front of the scorpion. Just lots of nice little touches like that.
Yeah, and did we mention the sort of kind of one shot where Bronn is kind of falling through the battle and just insanity is happening around him? Because that was also just a good shot in general.
And so it reminded me a lot of Jon Snow in Battle of the Bastards.
Yeah, it was like a direct copy of that.
Yeah,
which it's still impressive, but it's repeating something that is at least they're repeating something that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one they're mixing in some CGI though, rather than just.
I'm sure there was plenty of CGI in that Battle of the Bastards.
I think there'd probably be less because there's no dragons flying certainly around less. And shit like that. They keep flipping the camera up to a dragon in this one. Battle of the Bastards is just a crush of people, and I guess probably arrows probably were added in, stuff like that.
There might have been like sneaky edits in that too if it was more practical, because you're not going to have like horses running full speed by like your third or second build action.
Yeah, can I point out one important difference between the Battle of the Bastards and this battle?
Please.
The Battle of the Bastards was based on a historical battle between the Carthaginians and the Romans. This battle was based on nothing because it included a dragon.
I was gonna say I like the difference between the characters, because like while they mirrored each other, it kind of showed who they were. Like, John was pissed off because Rickon just died and everything that was going on. So he was basically charging in and just angry, while Bronn was improvising and trying to just fight and save himself and do what he needed to do. And it was just kind of showed you the difference in characters and who they are.
I think something really important, like personally, to mention in this scene is that I was not bothered by the logistics of it. So I feel like I'm making progress.
It was a great scene.
My only question,
I think it's reasonably plausible that like it's just a quick hop across the bay from Dragonstone onto the mainland, and they were probably pretty close to King's Landing already. And
yeah, given
if they're
that,
not on horseback, they're flying. I think it's totally fine.
Yeah, given that did they say all the gold was already in King's Landing?
Yeah, the gold made it.
Okay. Yeah. So they had to be fairly
close.
Wait, did it though?
Yeah, it was said I think twice, like that the gold crossed the gates, and Tarly, I know, told Jamie that it made it safely.
They probably said it while we were still talking about Missandei not being able to move her arm.
That's a very good point. But yeah, I thought,
we talked about that for a half an hour. I'm sorry, Megan.
We had to pause it to talk about it.
We should have paused it.
No, like,
this agenda is very complicated.
Pause and rewind to watch that.
It needed to be done.
It absolutely did. I regret nothing.
No, I mean, I watched it again tonight, just by myself.
Just the arms swinging?
No, the whole episode. I mean, I did rewind the arms swinging, I have to admit, because it is just mind-boggling. But the banker does say to Cersei, like, you know, we would be interested in backing you once we see the gold.
Yeah, it was after that.
It was after that that...
Okay, yeah, Tarly said he made it. Yeah.
Okay. Then I missed that, because I was thinking in the back of my mind, too, I was like, well, what if they just don't end up with this gold and then she's screwed because the whole reason for them taking Highgarden...
She's going to be screwed anyway. This gives us a interesting plot point, I think, is where they're going to go with this, and I hope they do, is Cersei's going to have to choose between paying them off and using that gold or to buy food.
Or the second company.
Yeah.
The Golden Company.
The Golden Company, she's either going to starve her people or she's going to have to use that gold to...
I wonder what she'll do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, she's going to have to make that choice.
And what that bitch is going to do.
Yeah. So
I think also their future credit has probably been cut off. Like, Tycho in the Iron Bank is going to take that payment and say, we're gonna see what happens here.
No, he said exactly the opposite of that.
The wagon train got lit up by a dragon.
Oh, I don't know if he cares about that. As long as he can pay their money, which they showed that they can get him the money. He doesn't care about the grain or soldiers.
He cares about the eventual winner. And it's far more difficult for Cersei to win when what happened just happened.
He cares about getting paid.
Yeah, he just got paid.
Right. So plus how long before they order the Golden Company and everything? Like, I would assume that they're already going to be on their way by the time this news reaches King's Landing. So my only question with the battle was the scorpion. Like, so are there multiple ones? I'm assuming there has to be, right?
Presumably. Yeah.
Cuz there's
no
way they just let them take the only one from King's Landing.
It could be like a World of Warcraft situation, or Warcraft 2 situation where she's still trying to mine like timber and stuff to make a second one. And he's just waiting.
And
now
she's
got a lot of her peons. She can mine timber very quickly.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Good call. He's the
But now, now we know that, or Danny knows that they have this contraption, so I guess she'll be a little more aware.
Yeah, just do what Rickon didn't do and just fly in serpentine and you'll be fine.
Jamie didn't either. He ran straight at that.
Well,
he
did. Speaking of the Bronn shooting at him, AV Club brought up a good point. When Bronn was about to shoot Drogon, or he was going to get killed, who are you rooting for there? Because everyone loves Bronn, right? Is there anyone that doesn't love Bronn?
Love Bronn. I was rooting for Drogon there because that's a lot of points for killing someone with a name.
It would have been fine if Bronn died then.
But I thought he was going to die. Like, I kind of wish he did. I mean, I don't know.
Still might. Like, maybe he got the brunt of the Dragonfire blast when he was knocking Jaime into the river.
I think I described somebody as polywalnuts a couple weeks ago. Bronn's the same way. He knows how to survive.
Poly pecans. It can't be two polywalnuts.
Sure.
Oh, by the way, turns out I have a pecan tree in my front yard. Didn't know about that.
All right.
I probably mowed $1,000 worth of pecans last year. So just so we know, guys.
This is roadside stands.
That could have easily funded. That could have easily funded MMC studio gear.
Yeah.
Are you implying that our quality isn't of the utmost here?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a discussion we had off the air.
Well, the good news is, John, I bought you some pecan harvesting clothing, and we're going to harvest some pecans this winter.
How floppy is the hat?
It's a good 9 inches beyond your forehead.
It's good. I don't want to get any sunburns.
Yeah.
It's very important.
I mean, I bought sunscreen, too.
Does one side of the overall is not buttoned correctly?
They both button, because I know you kind of like to freestyle it. Which side you want to go on button? But
like that. All right, I might break one of those buttons.
Well, yeah, maybe we need to scuffle like a young Tom Sawyer or type thing.
He can take Jeff with him.
Should I wear any underclothes with these overalls?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Overalls, floppy
right
hat
out.
Presumably barefoot as well.
I need you to carry your lunch on a stick and little kerchief.
Sure. That's called a bindle.
This is definitely not the first time we've had this conversation on podcast.
do I have a weapon to defend myself against people that kill hobos? Because that's what I'm going to look like.
No, everyone.
Can I sharpen the end of my bindle at least?
Well, yeah, you could do that. That's all right, fine.
That's good. If I'm sharpening my bindle with something, why not just use that as a weapon?
It's Valyrian steel, and you have to give it to Bran.
Okay. Wait, hold on. Sharpening your bindle isn't some sort of euphemism here, or
it can be. I mean, hobos probably fuck each other. They have to back fight somehow.
Oh, hey,
speaking of Always Sunny, like that's a great shock moment in Always Sunny.
Where's John and Leroy? Oh, sharpening the bindles again. Where? Behind the dumpster? I'll be right back.
leave these sad sons of bitches their joy.
How'd you go from harvesting pecans to being homeless, though?
To homeless fucking, actually, is what it was.
Where it takes you.
It's hobo law. You don't know anything about it.
You just
no, that is fair. I have no clue.
Put that thumb out. Wherever you get taken, that's where you go.
Hold on. You all should have spent that time doing what I did, and that was Googling as many videos as you could of the actress who played Missandei and see if you could find her walking and her swinging her arms or not. Can confirm she did a Speedo commercial where she was swinging her arms.
Oh,
all
right.
Oh, okay.
You're welcome.
It's not like a personal habit of hers.
No, I think it's a character choice.
It's a specific direction that Matt Shackman gave the actress. Do not swing your arms or you're fired. So what's because she's trying very hard not to. It's like, we will replace you mid-episode if you swing your arms.
What's my character's background? I really want to know for this audition. Okay, well, you are a former slave. You came from the land of Noth.
Can't swing your arms, you're a translator.
Wait.
What was that third thing? Translator?
No. The one where you said can't swing my arms.
That doesn't sound like something I would say.
Well, I'm prepared because my dad had a stroke.
Well, we need your face to work. So don't completely sublimate yourself on that character. This has been casting directors, a two-man skit. So
much for brevity.
Yeah. A final question. Dan M. asks, what territory are the Dothraki going to end up in charge of after this is all over? Like, Dorne. What did they get?
Dorne.
Give them Dorne.
Dorne is probably the most similar, and there are no more people there because the last person from Dorne is watching her daughter die in a dungeon. So it is empty.
Why do we think the traditionally nomadic people are going to want a place in the first place?
I mean, they can't just loot and pillage. They can't.
They've done it their entire lives.
They can't be land Greyjoys.
They've done it their entire lives.
They're just going to hop on the ships and go back.
Well, they need a new Vase Dothrak then or something, right? They're still a city where they eventually flock to, so they have some home. And then they can wander the rest of the time.
What happens when they get the door and there's like, there's only six fucking rooms here.
This is a nice pool, but it's filthy because there's no one to clean it because no one lives here.
I feel like they wouldn't care if the pool was filthy.
That's true.
Why are we always in the courtyard?
This is a very nice courtyard.
What was that? Was that Yakov Smirnoff doing the Dothraki?
Yeah.
The Dothraki surprised at the general shittiness of Dorne. Yeah. All right, that was a very specific impression, and I think I speak for everyone when I say you nailed it.
In Soviet Russia, poison kisses you. That would happen there.
Well, I think the Doss joke, we're killing it with millennials today.
I think the easiest thing for everybody is if the Dothraki just went back. Nameless characters that they all are. And
there's Kono. Kono has a name. That's about it, though.
Has it been said in the show, or is that just something?
No, it's been said in the show. He's the remaining leader, yeah. He's the one that was on the steps, swinging his arms.
He said your people don't know how to fight.
Yeah, he told Tyrion that.
Tyrion didn't say, well, Kono, I disagree.
No, he didn't say it in this episode, but he's been there for a few seasons now.
I don't know, man. That guy did not look familiar.
All right.
He looks familiar to me because I remember his picture from the game of Game
it's
of
because Thrones. All Dothraki, it's because all Dothrakis look the same to John.
As far as the show is concerned, they all are the same. As far as the show is concerned, these are an undifferentiated mass.
Oh, I get it. They all look the same to you, John.
That have no desires and ideas of their own.
Wow.
Like, one of them bows to Danny, like, well, shit, I guess we're doing this now.
Yeah, I think it has something to do with her walking out of the fire naked. Yeah,
whatever. They can't make their own decisions. They all just decide to follow her. They can do whatever they want now.
They're all there, John. Like, maybe some of them are back at home.
Because they showed her in the water. That would have been nice. If just if there is any pushback, like, I'm good. I'm going to stay here and
hold the fort down. See, like, 17 Dothraki on the coast watching the ships go, angry because they won't go.
It was just very easy. It was very easy for Dany to bring this entire ancient tribe across the Narrow Sea.
It took six seasons.
It took two episodes.
Did you miss the first six seasons?
They weren't in four of those. There was no Dothraki in like four of those seasons. She was captured. She burned their chiefs down, and then that was it. Simple
and then
as
they
that.
Fall. Oh, they were with them for what? The first two seasons. Skip one or two. Then they came back when she was captured or went to Vase Dothrak.
Yeah, right? and they had no lines after that point. Like, they're not characters. They're just vague forces.
You need to let this go. Right,
they're fighters.
You need to let it go.
As much as I usually like to make fun of John for being racist, he's actually right on this one.
Yeah. They have no input. Grey Worm is in the conference room. The Dothraki are not.
Grey Worm's not a Dothraki.
He's saying that's exactly the point.
He represents the Unsullied. He represents the Dothraki.
That is the least bold of your bold stances, Joe.
What he's basically saying is, you know, Danny's playing Rick Pitino and saying, Khal Drogo ain't walking through that door. And I don't know any other Dothraki's names, or I'd continue this example.
I don't know any Rick Pitino references. Otherwise, I might.
Oh, you don't know that? You don't know that press conference?
No. Something about his prostitution exploits, perhaps?
No. Or is it when he was fucking the lady in the restaurant?
Anyways.
Could have been both.
So I really, you guys didn't seem to think that this was like a really hard battle to watch, but I hated it. I hated every, like, in a good way. I hated every minute of it because I am attached to people. I was attached to people on both sides of that battle, and I think it's the first time that's ever happened to me in Game of Thrones where I wasn't, like, pulling for one side.
Well, it's the first time that that's happened in the entire history of the show.
I mean, I would quibble with that.
Where two main characters were going head-to-head.
Right. I think we see it the way Tyrion sees it. Like, that's kind of our vantage point in that we're kind of torn in what's happening.
So that was my question, is, like, where do you, like, Tyrion obviously doesn't want Jaime to die, but he also is there with Dany. So, like, where is his mind at right now? Do we think that there's any way that this gives him second thoughts about Dany and teaming up with Dany based on the fact that he just saw her, like, incinerate his family's army? I don't know.
I don't think he cares about the army, but Jaime and Bronn are probably going to be captured here, right? There's no way they escape. Right. So he's going to possibly have a choice to make here. Soon.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't even speculate as far as that goes.
I mean, he could be the one who pushes Jaime against Cersei, maybe, hopefully. Because I think while he's still on Danny's side, because it's mostly against his sister. I don't know. We'll see. It'll be interesting, at least.
But I don't think Danny would give Jaime any slack.
No.
Oh yeah,
no,
definitely.
But she's gonna recognize the value in him as a prisoner.
I don't think he'll be a captive. I'll put my nickel down.
You think him and his 80-pound golden hand and 200-pound armor swims away?
He's certainly not dead. I don't think like Drogon is sticking a wing in the water and pulling him out though either. I think it's going to be like in the fifth season when Tyrion and Jorah were fighting the Stone Men in Valyria and they are sinking beneath the water, cut to them coughing on a shore.
But you could talk about Stone Men versus an army of people who would see the value in the people who are in the water, right?
I mean, who I guess Tyrion saw this happen. Yes. Yeah, that's a great question. How are they going to get away? I don't know. I don't know. I don't like speculating generally about like what's going to happen next in the show. Just because I'm bad at it. But
it's never stopped me. I'm wrong all the fucking time.
And this is a triumphant person saying that.
Yes, yes.
So yeah. You must really mean it. What was your next question, Megan?
Well, so my next question was, I mean, I think it just goes back to the Bronn and Drogon thing. Like, I guess going forward, how many of these battles are we going to see where character favorites or like main characters still make it through to the end? Because at some point, right, they're going to have to start killing these people. And I just can't imagine that there's going to be many more episodes or battles like this where everybody's still, because like we're all assuming, right, that Jaime is alive.
So yeah, I think you raised a good point with that, because I think this is the kind of like the warning for like, hey, shit's real. That's why you couldn't enjoy this battle as much as some of the other battles, because it's almost like someone's going to have to die here eventually. And it's going to happen. So it's coming.
There's one person that, and we're not talking about the White Walkers here, I guess maybe two people that would be satisfying to the audience members who would die. That would be Cersei and Euron, right?
And Littlefinger. Mm-hmm. I'll pose a question to everybody. Who do you think the next big name is to die?
I kind of put it in my casino stuff last week. I think it's Varys.
Varys, okay.
Like, who do you think is going to kill Varys?
Littlefinger, in a roundabout way.
That seems like it'll take a while.
All right.
I would never stand behind that statement.
Okay.
I think he'll be executed for spying. So.
Yeah, Megan, I think he's in like an execution mode. I think she's coming off a big victory, and she's just like, we're just not going to talk about that again.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. I think Cersei's
next
to go. I think so.
I have no idea. Like I said, I'm bad at this.
That's why I wanted you to do it. You're wrong again.
Nymeria.
The Night King.
Nymeria's going.
The goat? The wolf?
Sure. Say wolf? The goat.
Why not?
The goat is
goats gone. Can be named Nymeria.
Black Philip.
He lives forever. He's alive today.
Hot Pod and Gendry are the only two left at the end of this.
No, they're safe. Totally safe.
I was going to say David Wells probably when he shows up next week.
Sure.
I'm amazed
that he's alive right now, honestly.
All those hot dogs. I think Littlefinger's next to die. I think this episode kind of set it up.
I'm closest to Bobby.
Like Arya, because something has to happen with a dagger or something happens. Yeah, something's got to move forward there.
Yeah, like if Bran can see a conversation that Littlefinger had with Varys, why can't Bran see Littlefinger holding a dagger to his dad's neck?
Or all the things Littlefinger did deserve to die.
Yes, that just being one of many that have fucked over the Stark family. Megan, do you have any more Donald Trump quotes?
Tweets? Yeah, I got two more.
With or within the character limit?
Jesus. They're all within now, John. It's
okay. Never again. Never again. This next one's really short, so you guys will be happy. Okay. So this one is where Tyrion is, you know, like kind of cursing Jaime under his breath, telling him to flee.
Fucking idiot.
So never in history has someone needed to flee like Crooked Jaime. So stupid. Why not flee? Sad.
That was a good one.
And then my favorite line from the whole episode, which is when Bronn was looking at Rickon, whatever his actual name is. I literally can't remember anymore. So the quote was, men shit themselves when they die. Didn't they teach you that at fancy lad school? So this is, the failing Tarly boy didn't learn that men shit when they die in coastal elite school. School reform top priority, hashtag Lannisters first.
There are a lot of ways into that last one. Like Donald Trump would probably be very proud of his fancy lad school that he went to. He talks about it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of different ways.
But coastal elite.
No. Yeah, that was solid. Yeah, Tarlys are famously the best of the best.
Next week I'll have character counts for you guys so that you can just shut up.
Fantastic. Okay, great.
Either way, Megan's 2 for 2. Shane's 0 for the center.
Oh, that's really my only goal going into this. Eat Shane.
Done already. So, there's nothing you can do to lose now. Rest of the year.
Quick fantasy update. That dagger, that Valyria dagger changing hands so many times was really helpful to a couple teams. Just like easy points. Easy like by the book. No specificity of judgment points that are increasing my scores and whoever's got... Phil, you got Arya, right?
Oh yeah, I do. Sorry, I'm typing because I'm all assuming right. In the King's Landing Casino, we are all assuming Jaime is going to survive.
Yes.
Yes. Oh yeah, 100%.
No one wants to know what's 7-2?
We all know. We can read it.
No, thank you.
Okay, fair
he would have given an interview to Entertainment Weekly by now if he was dead.
Oh, good point. With his next project.
Yeah. Danny finally is on the board with the fantasy game, getting Bobby from like the basement into the thick of it.
120 this week.
That's all right, well done.
My whole team is up.
And we've got Megan with us. She's within striking distance of Riley, who did not score any points this week.
Yeah, Jaime has more than you're on now.
Jaime has the most in the entire game. He is also the only person to have points in all five categories, all six categories.
All right.
That was my second round like hit, too.
He's like a six-tool player.
Right?
Butt shots paying off.
Right.
I'm glad I picked Tyrion over him. 5 points.
You're only ever going to do so well with wit.
Sam's great. Bringing up the rear at negative 20, yeah. By the way.
She might be the only one with negative points. He's like, even dead characters. She just, like, automatically, if a character dies, cool death or no, she just automatically gives him the 50.
No, Sam's worse than the people who haven't showed up yet, so there's that.
Grades for this episode?
I'm going to go with A-.
I'm going to go with A. I think it was maybe a top five, top something episode. I mean, it was, I don't know, maybe just because it's something I've waited for so long, and I think from beginning to end, it was a solid episode. Like, you know, both halves were good. So I give it another A. Back-to-back A's for me, this one being slightly better than last week.
I'm going B+. Save the last 15 minutes. I thought it was a little weak.
I agree with Phil, which is why I'm going with a B. I thought just all those dialogue-driven scenes at Winterfell, at Dragonstone, seemed a little flat and deflated. And not even when they weren't supposed to be, like with Bran. If without that ending, this would have been like one of their much lesser episodes. Like that battle, as far as like as on the battle continuum in the show, it's like towards the right. The right's good,
mm-hmm.
but just the rest of it was pretty unmemorable.
Can I ask a dumb question now? What's the worst battle on the show, though?
Dorne.
The Sand Snakes fighting Jaime and Bronn.
That's absolutely. Just like a little sword fight. That doesn't count.
It was a skirmish. Either way, is the worst fighting that ever happened.
Joe, grade?
I'm going to go A-. Anything below that, I think, is not fair just because of how awesome that scene was with the battle with the dragon. Basically something everybody's been looking forward to since the moment those eggs hatched. And I think there was a couple callbacks in the episode that were awesome.
Megan?
4.5 stars.
Okay.
Damn it.
Just disrespecting our letter grades. Letterboxd makes me do stars. And 4.5 stars is equal to an A- on my scale. So.
Yeah, I feel all right. I feel good about it.
That'll do us for this episode. Check us out on the internet at MuticaMovie.club. Like us on Facebook at Munich Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Mutica Movie Call, iTunes reviews, click on the Amazon link, standard disclaimer.
If you want to hear me for 75 seconds a week, download FML My Life, the Fantasy Movie League podcast.
We give the listener 50 times as much fill here. So, fuck them. thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
Thanks.
Have a good night.